In an age of information technology, it is more difficult for young people to pay attention to Kanians, the deep questions and difficulties they're facing. They may also forget to look up at the stars and be inspired by their ideals. Young people need educators, now more than ever, to help them embrace reality and discover their personal calling. Welcome to Kanians and Stars.
Hello, fellow listeners. Welcome to the Kanians and Stars podcast. We are speaking today about this beautiful new project with my dear friends, Daniel Bernardes and Emma. What's your surname?
Oh, it's always a little tricky, maybe. Cohen de Lara.
Cohen de Lara, yeah. It's a beautiful surname.
You can say Cohen.
It sounds a little Spanish.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Spanish background.
Yeah. Wonderful. So, Emma, who are you exactly?
Well, I'm a political theorist. I've been teaching in higher education for over 15 years now, both in the US and currently in Amsterdam, the Netherlands. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, that's, I'm also excited to be here. You're also excited.
Yeah, I'm very excited. Yeah, my name is Daniel Bernardes. I'm a theoretical biologist by training, actually. I've been specializing more in philosophy. I also teach at the same liberal arts college that Emma teaches at. And I'm now very excited to get started on this Kanians and Stars initiative, with which we try to help educators face some of the big challenges that we face as educators nowadays. I mean, I think education is a beautiful field, but also has many challenges, and young people today have many challenges. For instance, through social media, the whole idea of focusing people's attention. There's a lot of people that have maybe attention disorders, even or face anxiety. The whole world seems very complex to them. And I think some of these new challenges really require us to kind of sit down and think: where do they come from? These challenges. Where? What can we do about it? How can we understand them? And how can we very practically face them together? And I think that this education initiative is there to help educators tackle some of the big challenges, basing ourselves on some of the big tradition of thought that we have available to us.
Okay, so we're speaking about challenges yeah. of our society, in the age we live in. Yeah. And Emma, what are those challenges to you? How would you describe those challenges that Dan is speaking about?
Yeah, I think many people in higher education and in education in general, I think will recognize that maybe the challenges today are a little different from 10 or 20 years ago. And that could be in large part because of social media, as Dan is saying. What I'm noticing, so in the courses that I teach, they're very much focused on reading texts that are sometimes quite difficult. And the attention span of students is important, and it's something that they train also in these courses. But what I am noticing compared to about 10 years ago is that it just seems to be more difficult for young people to keep that sustained attention to something that is very valuable, and that also, not just academically, but also on a personal level, can bring them a lot. And so that, I would say, that is a challenge, and that could be caused by the social media. Could have other causes as well, but this is what we're noticing in our everyday teaching practice.
Okay. And so when I hear Kanians and Stars, I think about the geography or national sciences or something like this, but what does it mean? What is the context
about
it?
So on the one hand, we clearly have a mission, and our mission is to really bring hope to young people. So first of all, face the reality of their own lives. I think we help young people a lot, and we help ourselves a lot if we really face reality. So that's the first thing we want to help people do. But then through facing reality, we also want to face the reality of ourselves, of our own life, and kind of discover what our mission is in life. And so there was a Jewish philosopher, Jewish psychiatrist called Viktor Frankl, who wrote a very important book called The Meaning of Life, is it?
The Search for Meaning.
Man's Search for Meaning, that's it. In which it's become, during the pandemic, it's become a bestseller again. And in this book he says, well, it's very important. So he talks about his experience in Auschwitz, right, which is very traumatic. But he sees that the people there that have that discovered their mission in life, they have the strength to pull through. And I think this is something we can do for young people to really help them discover what their personal mission is in life. But to do that is not easy. It requires a lot of different angles, and we're going to try and help young people, but also help educators help young people to find this meaning which can pull them through the complex time that youth is, but especially also nowadays.
Okay, and when we're talking about facing reality, what is facing reality to you, Emma?
Well, maybe to go back to the metaphor of the Kenyans and stars, I think, you know, through life you go through depths and you go through highs, and the stars also stand for something that you aspire to personally. And I think young people in particular, I mean, when you get older at some point, generally, hopefully, you kind of see or are aware of what you want to accomplish in life. But when you're young, that is a big question. And so I think that's where we're hoping to help young people, or and educators helping young people. And what does that have to do with facing reality? Well, I think if you're looking for meaning, and if you're looking for what is my personal drive and my personal mission in life, then inevitably you will run up against reality. When I was 18, I kind of glorified the horseback riding.
Okay.
And I thought, yes. Well, who knows?
But it is fun, the horseback riding.
It is a beautiful sport. Yes. But the reality was different in terms of my talents and so forth. So I think that can also be a comforting idea that, well, there are certain constraints given who I am, where I'm at, and so forth. But within those constraints, what can be my personal mission that will help me flourish as a human being?
Okay.
Yeah, and I think, Emma has taken up the Kenyans and Stars metaphor a bit more, and I think there's even more to explore there. So there's the depths of the Kenyans. There's the stars, which are the big ideals. I think it's also beautiful that we try and really think about, you know, what are universal ideals? So what are things for me personally, but what are some ideals that are kind of true for everyone? And so, for example, the very fact that we can think about things rationally and try to do so well, that could be maybe a more universal ideal. But then there are also, you know, if you look at Kenyans and Stars, if you look at a picture, it's kind of beautiful, right? So you say, oh, wow, that's beautiful. So I think wondering at the beauty of things is important. But then also it's kind of an opportunity to explore. So we also want to kind of help people to explore the beauty of life and go on it as an adventure, like an epic to go into and to go on a mission, knowing that maybe you're not always completely up to it, like maybe Frodo in The Lord of the Rings, right? He goes to a mission that is completely over his head, but still dives in and while doing so, makes something beautiful out of it and saves the world, but not by his own forces, but by what happened.
So it's a metaphor of the exploring the beauty of life.
Exploring the beauty of life, facing both the depths and the heights.
Okay.
But all the meanwhile, you know, being hopeful also in the process.
Okay. And you mentioned Viktor Frankl, and I can imagine that there were several other thinkers that have inspired you.
Yes.
Setting up this project.
Yes.
For example, Emma, what was inspiring to you when making this new project?
The discovery. Well, I think for our project, we'll mention a specific philosopher, but I think Dan will be the best person to explain it. I think for me, also on my personal journey, reading texts that are kind of rich in addressing questions that have meaning has been very important. I grew up in the country, a very sort of quiet upbringing.
Where was it?
in the Betuwe, which is a small sort of agricultural area of the, in the middle of the Netherlands.
Very beautiful, right?
It's beautiful. Yeah. I actually rode a horse a lot, so I was with my horse for many, many hours in a week.
Exploring the beauty of life.
Exploring the beauty of nature. It's true. I mean, not as consciously as I might do today, but...
Yes.
And when I look back on that, I really value my upbringing, also because it gave me time for contemplation. And I think that that's important. And that also has to do with reading. And that also has to do with how we started out this podcast, this notion that giving attention to something and sort of quiet personal attention to something can be so very valuable for young people in exploring who they are and what they want, how the world works, what is beautiful, what's valuable, and so forth. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. And the philosopher that Emma mentioned and invited me to elaborate about a bit is called Leonardo Polo. And the reason why we think he is helpful for our initiative, well, there's actually several reasons. So last year we published a book called Freedom in Quarantine, which is kind of an overview of the history of Western philosophy, you could say, in three periods, the classical, the Christian, and the modern periods. And I think it really helps us situate ourselves in difficult times. That's also why I called it Freedom in Quarantine, because of course we were in a pandemic and a difficult time. And thinking about big things can kind of help us to be a bit freer, you could say. On the other hand, you could also turn it around and say, well, freedom has been in quarantine for a bit, because in modern thought, freedom has been a bit limited. And we could go.
Why is that?
Well, because it's a type of, we'll go into that in the next podcast in more detail, but in modern times, freedom is very much seen as kind of a freedom of movement, kind of an external freedom. And that is beautiful. I mean, we have airplanes and so on, but of course, this external freedom was being limited a lot in the quarantine, right? So you cannot move yourself. So you have to discover other types of freedom, and those freedoms are kind of the freedom maybe to develop yourself, also to develop personal relationships, which was also more difficult, of course. But there are other freedoms to explore, and I think for many people also. Maybe the
intellectual, spiritual
freedoms. Yeah, so there are other types of freedom there. So Polo can help us to kind of think about who we are as human beings, what it says for our freedom, but also just our own, how we see ourselves. And that has impact for a lot of things. In education especially, because of course in education we're trying to form ourselves as human beings. And how we see ourselves as human beings has influence on how we're going to form ourselves. You know, I'm a biologist, and in biology we've recently discovered epigenetics. And epigenetics means that there are influences from the outside, and you kind of take them in, and it even affects your genes, you know. So it's it goes very deep. Well, I think there's kind of an epigenetics of the way we see ourselves as human beings. So the way we think about ourselves as human beings actually has an influence on how we become as human beings. And the fact that a lot of people now, maybe a lot of young people, but also other people seem to be, well, have problems, well, with attention, but also other things like just finding meaning and this kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
If we dive in and see where does this all come from, that's really going to help us. So Polo, I think, there can help, as well as, well, he has a methodology, philosophical methodology, that really goes against reductionism. So trying to, you know, the human being, you know, ask a biologist and he says the human being is an animal. Ask a cultural scientist and he says the human being is culture. Ask an economist and he says he's a consumer. Well, of course, all these are reductions, right? So you need to somehow come to something more encompassing. Mm-hmm. And I think Polo can help with that. And the last thing he can help with, I think, is really explore the notion of what it means to be a person more deeply, which I think is very, very important for the notion of hope, which we try to convey in this, with this initiative. So, well, these are many things that I'm going over very rapidly, but we have to deepen that out a bit more later.
Yeah. So, but Emma, if I hear Dan correctly, so he mentioned that there's certain reductionism in society, but also a certain reductionism in academia as well. Right?
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I dare say that I think many educators in both middle and higher education today notice that, I think many educators notice the challenges that we spoke of earlier, that it's simply seems to be more difficult for students to sort of give sustained attention to the course material because of all sorts of causes. I think that that is something that's obvious. Mm. And you talked about the reductionism. I think there is a need in higher education today, certainly I sense that need, that in our course material to address, maybe not specifically or explicitly, but to kind of use course material that is not reductionist, that is more encompassing, and that encompasses also the kind of questions that students on a personal level could be struggling with. Mm-hmm. Yes, we are trying to offer course material and whatever educators have a need for to address the student in a way as a whole human being, not just as a consumer who comes to consume some education, but
yes.
Really as a whole human being. Yeah.
And maybe also more the philosophical backgrounds on more quantitative ways of doing science. For example, I met a student of econometrics, and I asked him about, for example, I've read a book about Friedrich Hayek and Milton Friedman. These are famous neoliberal intellectuals. And I asked him, do you know Friedrich Hayek? Do you know Milton Friedman? He said, I don't know them. I never heard of these guys. And I thought it was very interesting that an economics study of economics didn't know these important neoliberal thinkers. So,
yeah.
So one of the most, these were very influential in building our current economic system.
Yeah.
So that this maybe that is a sign of some reductionism, that you only only learn the calculus or the quantitative systems, but not the philosophical background that was the cause of it, or that was the basis of it, or helps it.
Yep.
Spread all over the world.
That's a good point, and that it touches on an issue that's also very current, right, in higher education. That I think across the board we're noticing that to just teach a very discipline strictly understood is maybe no longer sufficient. And what we say is that the problems in the world today require, we often use the language of interdisciplinarity.
Yes,
an interdisciplinary approach, which is. Very much fits with the Kenyans and Stars initiative. You can also say it requires an integrated approach, right? So thinking about economics, you cannot just think about economics while ignoring the way society works, while ignoring the way people are and so forth, right?
Yeah.
Well, and while ignoring where we want to go as
yes.
a society
yeah.
and as a world. So okay. Yeah, so we very much hope to offer an integrated approach.
I just want to also say that I don't want to attack the quantitative aspect of things, because I do think, so I'm a theoretical biologist by training, and I've always made mathematical models, and I think that's a very useful use of time, so I'm not saying that that's a bad thing, but of course we are trying to address is indeed the reductionism, so only doing that, right, which is what you were saying, or only looking at from one angle or another angle. And trying to get this all-compassing view, which really goes towards the personal development of the student also. So this
right.
is this is, I think, where we want to go.
No, that sounds very interesting. And before we switch to the practical side of the whole project, what are the things that are going very well in education or academia or society today? What are the benefits of our current age? I'm very interested in hearing.
Yeah, very important question. I think that it has to be clear that so we are not like modernity bashers or something like that. So in the sense that we really have to, I think, acknowledge that the progress that science has brought, the fact that we can get into an airplane and move around the whole world, that we can have record podcasts and videos and put them on YouTube and listen to each other all over the world. Those are great things, and we shouldn't be ungrateful, and we should be you know, say, well, this is wonderful, and we should help people also be at ease in this world, mm-hmm. and also to contribute to it in a way. But at the same time, we also see that it has generated a very complex world. And that means that we need to integrate that with a deeper reflection about what is this about and where are we going. And I think this kind of integrated perspective is what we're aiming at.
Okay. Emma, do you have something to add to this? Or?
No, I think that Dan is exactly right. And I also think education today is maybe a bit more democratic than it used to be. And there are many opportunities there. So at least in the Netherlands, but I think also in the United States, it's easier for students to speak up. And that's incredibly valuable, yes. because in that sense, education is not about me and look at what I know as an educator, but it's about helping young people being at home in the world. So I think that this interaction, which is more today maybe than 10, 20 years ago, is something to be greatly
good.
Appreciated, yeah.
And then speaking about interaction, so what are the tools that you have developed with the Kenyans and Stars project?
Yeah, well, so we have to say that at the moment we're really starting off, and we've been doing something. So, well, one thing that we're starting now is a podcast and right. a video show. So we're going to be on, you can listen to us and you can see us. Yeah. So that is I think, the first thing that we're offering. We've, in the past, we've spoken at an educational conference called ACTC. We've made a presentation there.
ACTC?
Yes.
I happy to say a bit, because it was a wonderful experience for us, I think.
Yeah.
It's the Association for Cortex and Courses, so okay. It's focused on...
It sounds like a band, but it's...
Almost. you're of that generation, I'm not sure if ACDC is still around.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Okay. No, it's focused on getting together educators from liberal arts and sciences college across the world. So we were very pleased and happy and privileged to be there, present this initiative as well. And we've made some wonderful connections there, I think.
Good. So what we presented there was a plan to develop an online course. We're currently seeing whether that's something that people really need from us. Another thing we're doing is we've given guest lectures. So we're going to give guest lectures. And I've also done a podcast with a school in the U.S., given a lecture there. So at the moment, we're kind of doing small things. But what we're hoping to do is kind of to form a community of teachers, of educators. You know, parents are also welcome. So maybe our key focus is people that work in the classroom or work in the administration of schools. But then parents can also join in. So we hope to talk to each other and see what form. So we have something to say. We have ideas to share. And we have a dialogue to start. We're looking kind of for the form in which we can best do that. So we would like to invite educators to join in the conversation and say, well, you know, would a guest lecture be most helpful to you? Would an online course would be more helpful to you? So whatever form you think is best. So we're kind of in the process of finding that out.
Okay.
And we'd like to invite people to join the interaction. Also, by the way, you know, if there's people that think, well, this is a great idea, we want to support this. We have set up a Patreon account. So if people want to support our work, that would be certainly very welcome also.
Okay. And the listeners, can they also give some feedback or ideas for
please,
the project?
Please.
Okay, good.
Yeah. In the comment section below or sending us an email.
Or in the details of the podcast details.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay, cool. And Emma, what can we expect in future podcast episodes?
Well, we're very, very excited, I think, to do a few podcasts on explaining the ideas of the philosopher that Dan mentioned, Leonardo Polo, since it's given us a great frame for looking at the tradition of text that we hope to also at some point offer in the course material or the teacher training courses or the guest lectures, etc., that we hope to develop. So that's where we'll start out, and we'll see where it takes us from there.
Well, excellent. Looking forward to it. And, listeners, thank you for tuning in and for the first Canyons and Stars podcast. Thank you, Daniel, and thank you, Emma, for being here.
Thank
you. Excellent. And fellow listeners, have a great day, and we'll see you on the next episode.
This was Canyons and Stars. For more resources, visit canyonsandstars.org. If you would like to support our work, please go to canyonsandstars.org and click on Contribute. Or find us on patreon.com/canyonsandstars. Because young people need educators. Now, more than ever, to help them embrace reality and discover their personal calling. Canyons and Stars. Let's grow together.